This morning we have a subject that bears upon the future of our world, our nations, and our families. And I'm going to drop back 2,500 years to sum up the problem in a few words, very choice words by the philosopher Confucius of China. He said in simple terms, as go the homes, so goes the nation. No exceptions to that, no variations on it, no excuses for not doing it. If the home life of a country fails, the failure of the entire political system is inevitable. Now, this was quite a while back. We've had a lot of experiences since then, but as far as I can tell, there are no experiences that justify the thought that this statement is not still active and important. In the 17th century, a Moravian educator by the name of Amos Komensky, Comenius, better named in Latin, who established what is now regarded as the first idea of a public school system in Europe. He realized that education was necessary not only for the maintenance of governments, but for the encouragement and advancement of peoples. And he suggested a very important point. Where does education begin? He said, it's hard to tell just when, but it is definitely there the moment a child is born. A child who has no education until he goes to school is almost a failure. It's only by a tremendous effort of circumstances that he will outgrow primary ignorance. And primary knowledge is knowledge by example and environment. Primary knowledge is in the home, where the members work together for a common good. Primary knowledge is responsibility, in which each shares in the labors of the others. When this is not emphasized, and the individual is not privileged in this way, or the home is broken up by a variety of circumstances, the national survival is threatened. There cannot be a disregard for the basic laws of nature without detrimental results for all concerned. So Comenius said, we will start with the mother school. The child begins to learn how to live the moment its life begins, and researchers at the present time seem to indicate that the child is conscious of circumstances even before birth. It inherits not only the body of the parent, but it also inherits the psychic overtones, the pressures, the problems that have dominated the life of the parent. The broken home is already a threat to the survival of the child, his children, and their children for 10 generations. We have completely forgotten the responsibilities that come with birth into this world. And we have forgotten what many of the ancients held to be true, namely that the world itself is the first school, the basic academy of all arts and sciences. And only by wisdom, thrift, integrity, and constant effort can we hope to graduate from the University of Humanity. So at the beginning of his treatise on children and education, Comenius mentions the mother school. The mother school is the school where the child learns seated at its mother's knee. She tells the stories. She sets the example. She shows patience under stress. She remains honorable in her relationship with all her children. She plays no favorites, but continues to indulge the natural maternal instinct of kindness and love. This goes into the child when it's a year old, or 6 months old, or 1 month old, and begins to shape the character of that human being. Unless there is some kind of consideration for instruction and environment together, we're not going to get an answer to our problem. In just a little over 12 years, we are going to come into the next generation, the next century. they're going to carry into the future the products of today. And it probably would be very well to realize that we've been given 12 more years in which to straighten out some of the problems that we face today. This is without question the most difficult generation that has been recorded in history. And this difficulty is not innate, is not inevitable, and is not predestined. It is the result of a series of mistakes, a series of failures to adjust to facts. And among the most important source of this information that we need is education. Education must be by both instruction and actual doing of the thing. It must be by education and by reliance upon the various facts of life. It must learn from books, but also learn by doing. Being part of a constructive commonwealth ensures the development of the child. At the mother's knee, the child also learns the primitive principles of religion. Today, we are beginning to realize, particularly in communized countries, that the lack of religious intention and instruction may be considered a basic cause for the collapse of a vast political structure. We cannot have any fulfillment of world conditions unless in the heart of himself each individual recognizes universal integrity, universal right, and knows that there's a plan in this world which man cannot break without punishment. You do not name a theology, you do not have to attend a particular church, but if you do not believe in a principle of integrity at the base of life, you're in serious trouble. Now, Comenius started with this idea of the mother's school, the school in which the child simply learned. He learned its ABCs, he learned to talk from the members of the family. It learned the very basic principles of courtesy and thoughtfulness and kindness and patience. It also learned to cooperate with the members in their tasks and to realize from the beginning that life was not just fun. It was doing what needed to be done and enjoy doing it. The family was not always just fun, but the family was worth more than any possible pain it could cause, because it was the source of the final, ultimate security and integrity of all of its members. When the family began to fail, the world began to drift into a very desperate circumstance. Now, the next thing that came into consideration for this Comenius was how to set up a curriculum. How should children go to school? Well, if they have been properly brought up at home up to the 7th or 8th year, they have very little likelihood of being ruined by schooling. They may not be completely educated by it, but if they can go to school without joining corruption on the campus, if they can go to school and learn the best they can and be sincerely interested in what they are learning, they will gain a certain amount, presuming that the temperament, disposition, and integrity is already settled in them. From the family, they are brought the knowledge of right and wrong. They are brought the knowledge of the things that can be done safely in a safe community and the things that cannot be done safely. So the child already has a moral code with which to test the education that he receives. And if he began to use this moral code, it would make a great difference in his educational convictions. Now, at the present time, of course, he is required to follow through a certain system of schooling. Very largely, this schooling is resented. Very largely, it is not providing the child with what it needs to know. It is not necessarily sufficient to teach a child reading, writing, and arithmetic. These things help, of course. But it's not necessary to do this without pointing out the proper use of reading, writing, and arithmetic. Today, the reading public is completely demoralized. Nobody knows what to read except when somebody else refers to it as important. So the paper pulp in the United States and other European countries is prodigious. We are pounding into paper pulp thousands and millions of copies of books that just could not sell. Therefore, reading is a discriminating art. The individual reads what is important. He reads what is necessary to give him a better enlightenment and a better basis for personal action. Writing is also very important because he must put down his own thoughts. Writing is important in letter writing, in contracts which he has to read and sign. Writing comes all the way through life with one thing or another. But writing also is governed by the laws of integrity. Today we are suffering from writing that lacks integrity completely. We are being drenched with literature that destroys or debases us. We are writing books that should never be published, and we are attending pictures which are based upon books that should never have been made. We have completely forgotten the integrities of these things, so that writing is now just a matter of learning how to scribble what you want to think or you do think, whether it is important or not. Arithmetic is very important to everyone. It was one of the sacred sciences of antiquity. But it was a science by means of which the human being could discover the source of himself, the great symbolism of the universe, astronomy, astrology, all of the great arts of medicine, all depend upon a degree of arithmetic. So arithmetic can be very valuable. It can become a science in itself. It opens the doors of many fields of learning, but all we use it for is to add up profit and loss. It never occurs to us that it is for any purpose except merchandising, adding up, looking whether taxes are correct or something of this nature. The whole history of mathematics, the fascination of it, as revealed in the writings of Pythagoras, we are completely ignored. So we people are using only the surface of knowledge, very carefully refraining from becoming aware of the depths of values and realities that are beneath the surface. So Cornelius also tells us that it is very, very important in the mother school to learn the laws of integrity and in education to become aware of two basic realities. One is the importance of the descent of history as it is built up. History showing exactly what happens to people when they do exactly what they actually do. History is a story of disillusionments, but it is also the story of the inevitable consequences of mistakes. It shows another example of how we have gradually drifted away from every value that was permanent, every realization that could have advanced our destinies, and become hopelessly enmeshed in a complicated technique of survival, a survival which some way must be cut, as Alexander cut the Gordian knot. We cannot go on the way we are. Every form of learning is only important if it helps us to understand universal truths. Lord Bacon, in his Advancement of Learning and in the Nova Morganum, clearly points out that the new organ of learning is the ability of the individual to interpret from things that happen the meaning of those things, the causes of them, and their inevitable results. He could estimate scientifically what would happen to a broken home, but science today is not too much interested in it. It is mostly considered a social problem. We cannot consider anything social as long as it is dependent upon a universal law for the fulfillment of itself. That which is ordained by natural law cannot be denied by man, regardless of his optimism on the subject. So Comenius also went on to point out the great importance of learning from what is obviously true. He tells us that we can study the history of all mankind by studying one family, that we can study the entire history of the world by studying the reign of one king or one ruler. We can find out what happens always if we are willing to look. We know what brought nations down. We know what built them up. We know that most of them were founded by militarists and buried by philosophers. We know that all of these truths are available. We can tell now, very easily, the story of Caesar. We know what happened to Napoleon. is quite aware of when Genghis Khan was tied to the back of his horse after death, so his followers would not know that he's dead. We know all these things. We realize what wars have done, what has caused them, and how they have destroyed the labors of ages. And still, with all this knowledge available, we make exactly the same mistakes and do nothing to change the situation. We have a feeling, which seemingly is quite widespread, that we can buy freedom from the consequences of conduct, that we can find some way of escaping the natural destiny of causes by some financial advantage. If we can buy someone's goodwill, we can go forward with it. If we lose this goodwill, we lose the job. So nothing remains of the integrity, only of what we have to do in order to maintain what we regard as the proper level of civilization. Another interesting point, I think, to make is that a materialistic culture, as both Confucius and Comenius pointed out, is bound to fail. There is no possibility of maintaining it, because no one can behave whose ideals are not higher than those of daily profit and loss. We cannot hope to create an educated world while education is pointed only at the accumulation of wealth. We go to university because we want a better kind of job. We think that with a proper alphabet after our names, that we're entitled to a high place in the economic structure. Sometimes we are, more often we are not. But in any event, we believe in education as providing us for advancement in the professions. I know at least three persons who have been in school now for over 30 years. They have not only taken the basic school, but they have also gone through the university. Then they have taken postgraduate courses. Then they have taken postgraduate courses on the postgraduate courses. And one of them ended up as a carpenter. Another one is still taking courses and will probably do so as long as he lives. He has learned all these things, but he has never had the time to do anything with any of it. Well, this is probably an exceptional case. But the fact remains, and it is very evident, that we are not able to make the situation vital because of our own attitudes on education. Education is frightfully important, but it must be based upon a basic idealism. It must be based upon the fact that there are rules and laws in life that human beings cannot break. And also that in all probabilities, those that are above the human level do not break these laws either. There are laws that are immutable. And these laws should be understood. We do a research project to try to find out whether there's any life on Mars, but we don't do any research projects to find out what universal law requires of us. We do not gain from all this knowledge a proper code of life. We do not have a proper understanding, generally acceptable, that the laws of mysticism or spiritual living are just as exact as the laws of physics. Wherever a law is a law, the human being must keep it or break it. If he keeps it, he gains from it. If he breaks from it, he punishes himself. Now, this type of thinking is basic to people who have studied almost any field of learning. There is no possible way in which a learning process can condone a false standard of conduct. Always the condoning ends in tragedy. So to go back to the Comenius concept, which is pretty good, I think, and was carried on down through the 17th and 18th centuries, we have to have a system of education that prevents the individual from breaking the laws of his relationship with life, with nature, and with whatever that divine plan may be that is immutable in the heavens and immutable upon the earth. These rules must be understood. Virtue, in the last analysis, is obedience to the law that governs life. The virtuous individual is not the smug one, but the law keeper, the individual who is dedicated to protecting value wherever it may be. There is no question in the world that in this particular period, between now and the end of the present century, we have a great deal of house cleaning that must be done. We must change a great many of our attitudes on life and on living and on profession and on arts and sciences and music and theater and drama. We find ourselves in a field of constant exploitation. Now, exploitation has so little value that it is hardly worth considering. But somehow, when we take away from the individual the concept of personal immortality, or destroy his belief in a divine power, when we do these things to him, we turn him over to a negative situation which he cannot carry with dignity. We turn him over to a complete frustration. And out of this frustration comes the natural result of materialism. If he has been taught materialism long enough and carefully enough, he is going to become what you might call a child or a person given to fun. He's going to make a game out of life. It may be a financial game, a professional game, a game in sports or something, but life will become some kind of a game. The reason why he takes it this way is because he assumes that he has no future. If he assumes that when he lies down in the grave, this is the end of him forever, then there seems to be no reason to cultivate anything except to do what you want to. But this has two shortcomings. He is not alone in this world. There are 6 billion of us here now, and when each individual does just what he wants to do, chaos is upon us in all its forms. Actually, almost everything that we do is a violation of common sense, a violation of the integrities of living. We store up enormous fortunes in order to get a little adulation, and we cannot take 1 cent of it out of this life. We come into this life with nothing but ourselves, and we leave with nothing but ourselves. Why, then, should this life be so frantic if we don't believe in anything? If we don't believe in anything, we might just as well be sober about it and go along and say to ourselves, the best I can do if I'm going to disappear forever is to make a gooder life as I can here, make as many people happy as I can. You make some contribution to future people who are going to lie down in darkness as I will. But instead of thinking this way, the individual is apt to go on narcotics to forget everything. All these things are the evidence that the educational system is in desperate need of rearrangement and reorganization and regeneration. The educational system, looking for facts, should finally get down to the basic facts and do something about them. Now, it isn't all the fault of the educator. We're not meaning to condemn him for that. It's not his fault. It is a combination of several different streams of tradition which are in conflict with each other and which prevent the victory of any integrity over the confusion of modern activity. We are in constant conflict between the levels of our thinking. When we're thinking for a moment of art, the next moment we're thinking of our stock investments. We are mixed up in all kinds of attitudes and beliefs, many of which are a waste of time and many more a waste of money. And yet we follow all these things because we have been taught to. Education has been made an instrument of fitting in to a society. It began perhaps in New England when the educational facilities were limited to the elite. Only certain persons were expected to be educated. And if they expected to be educated, they expected to sit in judgment over everybody else. They were just a little better than anybody else. They had no particular ability. Maybe they never did an honest day's work in their lives, but they were superior simply because they had this education to which they were entitled by heredity. This type of superiority is, of course, completely wrong and produced nothing but snobbishness. But it went on for a long time. And even today, there is a great sense of special importance in an individual who has attended a very important university or who has taken very important specialized courses on some subject. It is assumed that he knows more. Thus does not necessarily follow at all that he knows more. All thing is that he has been to school longer and perhaps has been exposed to ideas that he never could use and were not true in the first place. So we cannot depend on those things for our actions or our activities or our solutions. We have to go back and begin to work on our own nature and our own abilities. We have to work from the simple basis that the first thing we have to be in this world is to be honest human beings. Until we gain that, there will never be any peace, there will never be any equity, there will never be any understanding or friendship, there will never be any end to the conflict and turmoil on every level of life. We have got to be honorable people. We've got to be true to principles. And what principles? Not principles of taking it away from somebody else, but principles are based upon principles of integrity within ourselves. Each person, as he approaches this next century, should be prepared to face the importance of self-improvement, that he will do something to do better than he has ever done it before, that he will carry forward into the next generation young people who have been taught to love work, to rejoice in responsibility, and to do the work of the world graciously, cheerfully, and without expectations of special privileges. All we have to do is to get this thing straightened out educationally is to teach from what we know and not from textbooks. We must teach from the things that we can see. We can take the experiences of our neighbors and also, of course, historical experience. But we can find ways to know that certain things don't work. Napoleon, for example, made the statement one day that almost any clever general can win a battle. But only with the help of God in peace can he run a nation. Without the belief in God, you cannot hold a civilization together. Call it superstition, call it anything you want to, but the absence of it absolutely condemns a structure to failure. There is no way of escaping it. Therefore, it's apparent that nature didn't want us to think that way. Probably the greatest proof to the skeptic of the existence of God is the fact that nothing can get along without him. So we might as well learn these things. And instead of learning some technical explanation of some way of training lizards in Galapagos, we get down to working with people, working with the problem as it is, and make education the art of sharing knowledge and not sharing prejudices and conceits. Education should also help us to get out of the mess that we're in rather than to get in deeper. Today we have accepted the fact that our natural resources are gradually dwindling. We respect the fact that our industrialism is destroying our climate, and that all kinds of things that we're doing, we're wearing out our natural resources, we're exhausting our petroleum supply, we're doing all kinds of unpleasant things with life, and we're still looking for a place to throw our garbage at somewhere away from here. We are actually wasteful, thoughtless about the facts while we go out to explore this inner structure of the galaxy. Well, that's very nice if someone has the time and leisure to do it. No one should say he shouldn't or couldn't. But there's time for the best minds that we have in the world to get out of politics and into the facts of life. We are in a position where we have got to come back to basics. We've got to come back to the realization of what works. We have to realize that there's something more than a sham in the fact that the Confucius taught that every living person should live as though his ancestors were in the room with him, seeing how he did it, and his descendants in the same room to congratulate him or punish him for his mistakes. That we do not live alone at all. We live with the past and the future. And sometimes that past is only an hour away and that future 10 minutes ahead. All these things mean the universe must be put together into a pattern that we can live with and live by. If we cannot do this, it's going to be very, very hard to get into the next century successfully. But supposing we make a very definite effort this way, how can we get to the point where we can face the year that is coming up? Well, face the year that begins with the year 2000. This is the problem that we have to face now, and there are ways in which we can do it. And one of the ways is to clear up as much complex as we can while we're here now. It is thus better to carry as little trouble into the future as possible. The present trend is to throw all the trouble into the future, assuming that in good time and in space and in eternity, all this garbage will disappear. There's no proof that it will not also disappear and take us with it, because we cannot continue in the present force. We cannot go on wasting resources, destroying our ozone levels, finding it impossible to get rid of our nuclear rubbish. We cannot do these things unless we do something about it. We cannot kill off all the wildlife without doing something to nature that we shouldn't. We cannot actually afford to live constantly and forever in the face of the very things that are causing us the most trouble. We cannot build a new generation on the present TV programming, which is very poor in most cases, and actually can contribute to the delinquency of the young, but we don't look at it that way. The thing that is important is that these great corporations show a profit. But the fact of the matter is, most of them show a debit, but we don't see it. The debit being the deterioration of society. We have to do a lot of things to clean up our world if you wish to hand it on to somebody else. I know an old lady who always liked to rent a flat that she had upstairs. It was her principal source of income. And of course, when people moved out, they generally left it either dirty or disordered. But see, before she rented it again, she thoroughly cleaned it and made it just as neat and immaculate as possible. Before we go into the 21st century, we've got to clean house. We've got to make sure that that is not going to be a century in which the rocks that we have tossed up in the air come down and hit us on the head. There is no way of escaping the facts of life. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. And we have been told also that as the twig is bent, so the tree is inclined. I'll tell you, the 20th century has certainly inclined this tree. We have more problems, more difficulties, and more abuses of power than the rest of history put together. We talk about being civilized in the face of the past, and yet the bloodiest wars and most terrible persecution ever recorded are in our present century. We have not learned the essential lessons of civilization. And if we can't learn them, how can we ever gain the knowledge? We cannot relive the history personally, but we can depend upon education to summarize these various facts, make them available to us honorably. Civilization should learn to know, as Napoleon found out, that you cannot civilize a faithless world. You cannot take the belief in good out of an individual without replacing it with a faith in evil. All these things are part of a very simple, honest approach to realities. The average Vermont farmer could work it out, but all our technicians can't get there. They just do not understand that we live in an honest universe. And the first and most important thing that education should do for all of us is to help us to find the honesty and integrity in the law of cause and effect. That as we sow, so shall ye reap. And in any case, no matter how we try to avoid it, those things which we do intentionally wrong come back to us as misery and suffering. Today, the average American home, and world home for that matter, is a mass of conflicts. The stability of the home is vanishing. Why? Primarily because of the profit system. Because costs of living have become so high, profit, and members of the family feel that they have to go out and become employed, which was not their original purpose. All of these things come along, and they have to be solved. They cannot be brushed under the edge of the table. They've got to be met and understood and worked with, and our whole system of knowledge has got to get down to the point where it handles and works with the essentials of daily living. It's wonderful to think it might put around Jupiter sometime. That's very interesting and very thrilling. But that we can keep the man here from going crazy or committing crime or committing suicide or dying of a broken heart, all these things are much more intimate. We've got to take care of our own people. We've got to help them to find their way. We've got to get rid of the ambitions of rulership. We've got to get rid of all the dictators and things of that kind and go back to common sense. And common sense in this matter means honesty. It means the individual doing what is the greater good to the greater number. It is getting himself out of the way as a center of ambition in a universe in which ambition is a basic mistake. So we have everywhere we go and everywhere we turn the obvious evidence that our education needs redoing. We do have the understanding that young people coming out of our high schools may already be on narcotics. What has the school done to prevent this? What has the family done to prevent it? The family probably hasn't talked about it because it doesn't want to. The school does not bring up much of this work. A little bit now is coming in to help us out. But the great problems of this kind are not the problems that are brought head-on to the life of young people. It's beginning, and it's because it is beginning, we have great hope for better things to come. It is now part of our life, but between now and the end of the century, we've really got to get at it. We've got to put the power behind right. We've got to support everything that we can possibly support that goes in the right direction. But most of all, immediately, we must find out that we ourselves are going in the right direction. The things that we are doing must be the right things. Our attitudes towards each other must be right. Confucius again brought out that problem very well in one of his discussions, namely that the beginning of civilization is one family being civilized within itself. Then we have the brood family, which was the final unit in almost all civilizations. The family group was the basis of all international relations. All the vast outspread of cities, towns, and countries all began with the brood clan, a family of one elder or two or three elders and a small little civilization of 30 or 40 people. These people had to learn to live together in a great world of wonders, dangers, and fears. It had to depend upon itself. It had to work for itself. It had to feed itself. And it had to create within itself a form of government by means of which it could survive. And this government was vested first in the elders, those who had the long living, who had been here a long time, and therefore were well acquainted with the mysteries of life. The second source of this instruction was the dead, the ancestor who had gone before, and who was contacted by the sachem, or the medicine priest, and received the information necessary to guide the people. Then, the third, was the young person himself, learning at the feet of the old and the wise and the true. The Indians had no salaried instructors. The old ones were the true ones. Grandfather and great-grandfather, they knew the way. They knew the land. And the young people lived in close contact with them. Then there was something else that I think we should do something with, but we don't know just what yet to do with it. But in almost all ancient civilizations, a child is not born a citizen. Now, this is a very interesting point. Citizenship must be earned. It is not conveyed by birth. In Egypt, citizenship was physically manifested by cutting the curl of child hair from the head of the new citizen. When he became a citizen, the child lock was cut from his head. Up to that time, he had to go around with it. And to be a citizen, he had to prove something. He wasn't a citizen because he was born there. He wasn't a citizen because his family was rich. He wasn't a citizen for any of these reasons. He had to go and prove his earned citizenship. he had certain labors he must perform, certain dangers he must face, certain decisions he must make. He had to give something of his life to the good of the rest of the group. He had to recognize that citizenship meant to assume his share of the responsibilities of all other members of the community. He was responsible for the happiness of those who were miserable or the feeding of those who were hungry. It was part of his life as a citizen to work for the common good first, last, and all the time. And the first thing that each citizen was expected to be willing to sacrifice for the common good was his own life. Now, after he had passed through these tests and so forth, which took quite a time, which had to prove physical bravery, mental thoughtfulness, emotional integrity, had to prove that he was capable of forgetting himself in the cause of something better, he was finally brought to a general meeting of the community. He was given the symbols of maturity and then became a citizen and was qualified to vote. But he had to prove that he was a dedicated individual to that community or he could not gain citizenship. And after he gained it, woe to him if he broke his vows. Instead of being forgiven, he would probably be either executed or exiled for life. There was no fooling with citizenship. Citizenship was a gift of the people in approval of the conduct of an individual. No other possible way. Now, we probably might not want to follow the example of Lycurgus with his Spartan way of life, but he was of the opinion that no individual was worth anything who had never suffered for his principles. And he affirmed and assumed that most people suffered not for their principles, but for the lack of them. And that therefore it would be a good plan once in a while that a person should suffer for a real principle that was worthwhile. So Lycurgus played courage, integrity, and personal virtue were the great principles of life. So we have all these different things to think about. And then in citizenship, we have another problem that we find in connection with the ancient American civilizations. Citizenship required certain proofs of maturity. In the Aztec civilization, they were quite aware of the existence of alcoholic beverages. But if a young person, man or woman, became an alcoholic, it was something that was not even considered a minor offense. It was a major offense. And for this, they could be severely punished. They also might be imprisoned just for being intoxicated once. But if they were over a certain age, they could drink all they wanted. Because it was said then, they weren't responsible for anything they did anyway. A curious rule, but at the same time, I'll tell you, a lot of people here would be a bit out of business before they were 60. It was the way things we do things. But every nation has had some way of trying to cope with the individual who would escape the normal burdens of life.